Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
What would make a young American leave home in the 1960s and travel halfway around the world to serve strangers? In today's This Week in America, Gary Lindberg, author of The Vegetable Grows and The Lion Roars, My Peace Corps Service, takes us inside the early days of the Peace Corps. From village life in the Ivory Coast to building school gardens, navigating breakdowns in the middle of nowhere, and even traveling to legendary places like Timbuktu. Gary, a UC Berkeley graduate during the free speech movement and a longtime human resources professional, reflects on how his Peace Corps experience influenced his worldview and lifelong path. This isn't just a travel story. It's a heartfelt, eye-opening conversation about courage, service, adventure, discovering humanity across cultures, and the power of stepping into the unknown. Back with us on This Week in America is Gary Lindberg. Gary, welcome back to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to be back with you. I'm looking forward to talking with you. I thank you for taking the time.
I am looking forward to this. And when Gary was here the last time talking about his book, God's Existence, Deeper Thoughts for Greater Insights, that book's available. I'll mention it again at the end of the program. But we had just touched on this, The Vegetable Grows and The Lion Roars, and I was looking forward to our conversation today. Gary, let's start with why joining the Peace Corps. This was new. This was back during the 1960s. What was it about it that when Sergeant Shriver was talking about it, that it captured your attention?
Well, he was talking about service, giving service to other people. And he came to University of California, Berkeley, where I was going to school during the fall semester. I went to hear him, was very impressed, but I thought, nah, it's probably not for me. He came back in the spring semester. And again, I went to hear him, and again, I was very impressed. And I said, this time, I think I'll challenge him. Let's see what he'll do with my application. So I applied and got 10 people to offer themselves as references for me. And I listed all the reasons for me wanting to join the Peace Corps. And I waited, and I didn't hear anything before the end of school. And so I graduated. Well, after I graduated, it was time for me to make some decisions because I was high on the draft list. At that time, the Vietnam War was going on. So I had to do something. And so I started thinking about applying for the Air Force, which my big older brother was in. And what was intending to make a career before he changed to NASA. But so I wanted to contribute to other people and learn more about different cultures. And I wanted to see what I could do to help in the way I could help, however they wanted to use me. And I had some ulterior motives too. I wanted to travel through Europe after my Peace Corps service because I figured I was already halfway around the world to start with. So I didn't need to travel from the United States all the way to Europe. And I just asked Peace Corps to give me the money for my ticket. And I proceeded to go through Europe, Italy, Germany, France, England, and the Netherlands. I had a whole list of reasons. There were about 10 different reasons, and I think I did accomplish most of those reasons, if not all of them.
And you share those in the book, The Vegetable Grows and the Lion Roars, My Peace Corps Service by Gary Lindberg. There's so many elements to the story and what Gary was involved in, working with the people, being part of the culture, traveling as he was talking about. He's got pictures in there as well. The story really comes alive. And it's a story of what he went through. People in the early days of the Peace Corps, what they went through and the impact they were able to make on the world. Once you were accepted, what was it like when you went home and told your parents, okay, I've got something planned here for my life right now, and it's a volunteer thing?
Well, that was quite a surprise, both to me and to my parents. And I happened to be in the process of applying for the Air Force, and I went to spend the day at Vandenberg Air Force Base, which was about 25 miles away from Santa Maria, California, where I was living. And I spent the time answering questions, filling out papers, and I don't even remember all that I did. But I got back in the middle of the afternoon, or late middle of afternoon, and there was a big manila envelope on the kitchen table, and it was from the Peace Corps. And I took one look at that and I said, oh no, they're actually going to invite me to join the Peace Corps. I can't do that. And so that's what I was thinking, but I didn't say that. Well, my mother walked up to the kitchen table and said, you're not going to do that, are you? As soon as she said that, my mind clicked. And I said, oh, yes, I am. And that was the decision. And they respected the decision, and everything worked out well.
It's an amazing story. It's in Gary's book, The Vegetable Grows and the Lion Roars, My Peace Corps Service. Gary's website is GaryRLindbergh.com. Got that on the website, thisweekinamerica.us. You were invited to a health education project. You ended up becoming part of the school gardens program. Talk about how that happened, that evolution, that change.
Well, we went to UCLA for about 3 months of training in the health education project. And during the last couple of weeks of the training program, they asked for volunteers for a special school gardens program. It seemed like the Peace Corps was trying to persuade the Ivory Coast government to actually have volunteers come over and participate in that program. Well, the French always sent a lot of agricultural engineers to the Ivory Coast. And so the Ivorians were very skeptical that any college graduates that, you know, didn't have any background in agriculture would then be able to participate in a school gardens program. So that we were basically an experimental program, and I told the Peace Corps that I was willing to do whatever they wanted me to do, but I had my preference, and that was to remain in the health education project. Well, they left it at that. We had a break after the training, and then we went to the Ivory Coast. And during the orientation, which was only a couple of days after we arrived, they asked again if we wanted to volunteer for that. And again, I said, I'm available if you want. But, you know, my preference was health education project. Well, it turned out that the four of us were selected for the school gardens program. Each one of us were individually assigned in four different areas of the Ivory Coast. And I underwent some training for a month to learn the basics of school gardens. And I learned various techniques. And those techniques included making a planche, which is a 1 meter by 10 meter mound of dirt. And you had to make it with a daba, which was a short hoe, about a foot long handle, and a very small head to dig up the soil and create that mound. You have to dig it outside the perimeter of the actual mound to get the soil to build up the mound. And then there's questions of how do you plant the seeds? Well, there are some seeds like tomatoes and lettuce that were very delicate. And so we would plant them on just throw out the seeds on a planche, and they would grow up to about 2 inches, and then we would transplant them. That was another technique, onto a regular full-size planche. And it enabled the delicate plants to grow more successfully. And you would put shading over them, and we taught them to stake string beans so they wouldn't lay across the ground and rot. And so those are the kinds of things we were teaching them.
You know, it's amazing. You're there. They're normally the engineers from France that were in there, and you were teaching them. What was that like, and how were you accepted? You were like the B team. If you've got the French engineers coming in there, yeah, and you've got these young college kids, and it sounded like you took to that, and you really were beneficial to them in teaching the techniques.
Well, basically, what we were doing was kind of grunt work, if you will, and that was really below beneath the dignity of the agricultural engineers. They had more broad training and understanding of agriculture than we did, and so they really didn't need to do that kind of work. It was a real waste of their time, but for us, learning, having a month training, it worked out extremely well. And we were very successful, and the idea was that if we were successful, then the Ivory Coast would accept a regularly trained program to succeed us. And a regularly trained program did succeed us. So we achieved that goal.
What was it like, because you are working really at the ground level, literally with everyone there, and you can see probably on their faces that they're understanding you are making this better for them, the situation better for them. You're teaching them things they didn't know before, techniques that they were not aware of. What was that like? What kind of satisfaction did that bring you to see that what you were doing at that level was making a big difference?
Well, it was really very important because the Ivory Coast initiated the School Gardens program for two reasons. One, they wanted to teach young children and even have it, be absorbed by their parents, that vegetables were healthy and good for their diet and made them live longer and so forth. The second reason was for the Ivory Coast. They noticed that in countries like Nigeria, where the villagers would leave the villages and go to the major towns, in Nigeria's case, Lagos or Ibadan, and they would just congregate there, and there were no jobs there. So what do? They lay on the sidewalk, and they were basically homeless. And the Ivory Coast was trying to avoid that. They're trying to prevent that. And so that was rewarding for us to know that we were contributing to those goals.
What was it like working with the people? You go there, and I'm sure you had some background, some idea what to expect. But when you're there, you're working with side by side with many of these people. You are giving them techniques that could be life-altering in many cases. What was that like working with them, interaction with the local people?
Well, it was very good, but it did depend on our ability to communicate, and we had to communicate in French. We could not speak English because they wouldn't understand us. So we had to explain things all in French, and we would demonstrate the various techniques. We would make a planche or start to make a planche like we were telling them to do, and we would put shading on it. And one thing is, because the rains, when they came down, they were very, very strong, and they would cut through the soil like a hot knife through butter. And so they had to put the planche perpendicular to the slope of the land, so that would actually prevent the plants from being washed away. And things like that, to see that they would adopt these techniques and to see that they were learning what we were trying to teach them was very rewarding.
And it was the Peace Corps, United States people, citizens that were there helping them at that level, giving them the knowledge they need to continue for themselves. You were allowed vacation time. Talk about that. And obviously you took advantage of that.
I did very definitely take advantage of the vacation time. I had vacation time the first year I traveled around Nigeria. I went from Lagos up to Aden, north to Kaduna, then to Kano, the famous mud city, Kano, and which was the interesting thing was that 2 weeks before I arrived there, the Hausa tribe, the dominant tribe in northern Nigeria, massacred a bunch of Igbos, which were basically from the southeast part of the country, because they were the kind of the merchants of the town, and the Hausas were kind of jealous of their dominance in their society, and they didn't like that, so they took it out on them violently. And 2 weeks after I left there, the beginning of the Nigerian Civil War actually erupted. So it was kind of a tense time to see that. But then I went back down south, back to Enugu, back over to Enugu, back to Kaduna, I should say, and over to Enugu in the east, and then back to Lagos. And then I actually went to East Africa, and a bunch of Peace Corps volunteers chose to charter a plane to fly us all back to Nairobi. And when we got to Nairobi, we had to decide what we were going to do and where we were going to go. And I had no idea. I had several people in my Peace Corps group from the Ivory Coast who wanted to go to the big mountain there, and I wasn't really interested in climbing a mountain, so I was more interested in visiting the game the reserves and seeing all the wild
Oh,
animals,
yes.
and I thought that would be more exciting and more interesting. So that's what I did. And when I arrived there, there were four girls that came up to me and asked me if I would go with them. And I kind of asked, well, why? And they said, well, you're a guy and you know about cars that we don't know. And I said, well, I don't know anything about cars, so I don't think I'm the right guy for you. And they said, no, we want you. We really need to have you do it, and that's okay. I guess they didn't believe me or something. I don't know. They found out that was true when I later, but at that time they agreed, and so I said, okay, well, I'll go with you. So we went to Nairobi National Park, and we saw all the lions and wildebeest and antelope and all kinds of good stuff, good animals. And then we went to Amboseli National Park, and we saw more lions and other wild animals, wildebeest and so forth. And then we went on to Serengeti, the famous Serengeti, and we traveled all around there, and we saw leopards, and we saw cheetahs, and we saw lions again, and so we were in that kind of environment. And when you're I actually drove up about a yard up to a lion that was laying sideways down on the ground in the savanna, sleeping. And then when I got that close, he raised his head and growled a little. So I knew I drove the car a little too
Too
close.
close. What amazing stories, and they all come to life in Gary's book, The Vegetable Grows and the Lion Roars. All the stories there of his time in the Peace Corps, pictures as well. When the car broke down, talk about that, because you don't have AAA to call at that point. You didn't even know where you were. How did you get that you're there? That's got to be a feeling of desperation when the car breaks down, and you, by your own admission, don't really understand how a car works. Well, how did you handle that? How did you get out of there?
Well, was a miracle. I think they kept, as we left Serengeti, we went on the main road, which was actually a dirt road, very well graded and well done. It was a nice road, but one of the girls happened to have read some information about the Olduvai Gorge, where the Leakey family discovered the oldest remains of humans. And she wanted to go there. Well, the other girls were interested in doing that. And I went along with it because I was only one voice. And I would have been interested in it anyway. But I didn't know how to get there. We didn't have maps. We didn't have GPS. There was nothing there to know where we're supposed to go. Well, as we drove a few more miles away from Serengeti, we see this small sign about 8x10, and it says Olduvai Gorge and points the arrow to the left. And so, that's where we want to go. I didn't know any better, and they didn't know any better. So we drove off the main road, drove on this road to Olduvai Gorge. Well, this road twisted and wound around and finally got into some hills, and then a car overheated. Well, here is old Gary, the car expert. I opened up the hood and then opened up the radiator. Well, at the temperature that the Savannah was, it was pretty hot. So all the water goes spurting out, just sprayed all over. And I said, well, I didn't say it but to them, but I was thinking, I told you so.
See?
The problem was we had no water then. I should have left it there and cooled down. But, after visiting all these animals, we didn't know when the animals would show up where we were. And we didn't think that it was a good idea to sit there and wait for them, because the day was moving along. And it started getting a little towards the afternoon and the later day. And so we actually saw a couple of Maasai. I claim they're Maasai warriors or herdsmen. I don't know if they were Maasai or not. But one of the girls happened to have an English Swahili dictionary. And she looked up the word water in Swahili. And in our best Swahili, we don't know how to pronounce Swahili. So how do you emphasize the first syllable, the last syllable? How do you pronounce the word? We tried to say the word lakwa or whatever the word was, and they didn't. The people, the herdsmen, didn't move, and. So we tried to say it again, Lakwa, Lakwa, whatever. But it wasn't seeming to communicate. But finally, he said something about money. He wanted some money. So we thought that he was least understanding the main message, that we wanted water, but he wanted money to do it. And so I was negotiating with him, and he said, money, then Lakwa. And I said, no, Lakwa, money. And finally he said, okay. And so then he starts charging across the plains. And we happened to have had some of these 6-ounce Coke bottles in our car that we had. We drank the Cokes, and so we had the bottles. But these bottles are small bottles, and they're shaped.
Yes.
You know how the Coke bottle is shaped. And so we grab half a dozen of these bottles, and or even as much as we could carry. And this other girl and I started charging after this herdsman. And we don't know if he's understood us or didn't understand us. We're just following him. So he marches along, and he's moving at a pretty big clip, so the girl has to almost run to keep up with him. And I was moving pretty fast myself. And So we get up there and we follow him, and he's churning along and moving fast. And finally, he stops in the middle of nowhere. And we don't know why he stopped, but we finally catch up to him. And he's standing right over a mud puddle. So we dip the Coke bottles into the mud puddle, getting as much water as we can and as little mud as we can. And we fill up these bottles we have. And so then we march back. We paid him whatever we paid him. And then he went on to take care of his herd. He had a herd of cattle and I think some goats. But anyway, he went back to them, and we poured it in our radiator. Now, I don't think mud ha works very well in radiators, but we had no choice. That's all I had. You can't pour out the water without pouring out
Yeah,
the mud
yes.
too. And so we probably filled up a third of the radiator. I don't think we filled up much. But so then we get in the car, and we're about 10 miles away from the main road by this time. And so are driving back, and I said, if the car overheats, I'm saying this to myself, if the car overheats, I'm not stopping. I mean, I'm sorry about the car, but I'm not stopping.
Yes.
And about halfway back, it starts overheating again. And so I didn't stop. I finally got back to the main road and turned left, so the direction we were trying to go, because that was the direction for the Ngorongoro Crater, one of the sites we really wanted to see, which turned out be that we weren't able to. But anyway, that's the direction we were trying to go. And as we were driving along a mile or two, I don't remember exactly how far. But we saw this corral off on the right, and the land was kind of slanted up a little bit, and so I drove the car up the slanted land, and there was a this circle, and I pulled off to the left of the circle, and we got out, and again in our best Swahili we say water or lakwa, lakwa. And they motioned for us to come around 180 degrees to the other side, where apparently they had the whole circle was a fence of thorns to protect the cattle that they had and themselves. And so we got around the other side. They wanted to invite us for dinner since we had read they like blood a lot. We weren't too excited about having dinner, and so we tried to say no thank you, no thank you, and then they gave us water, and it was beautiful, clear water, perfect, perfect water, and they filled up our radiator for us, and we were astounded because we understood that they were giving us their lives. They were that water was for them to drink and for their cattle to drink. And when they don't have that, that's kind of serious.
Yes.
And so that's then we got back to Ngorongoro Crater, and we saw some people that we already knew and from previous encounters, and we spilled our guts out to them and telling them the whole story. And it was an amazing event that we were there. We could have died because when we first started looking for the water, one girl and I grabbed these Coke bottles and we charged off in, let's say, the left air direction, and we walked a couple of miles and we saw a sign that said Ngorongoro Crater, another 5 miles or something like that. And I didn't think that we would find our way back to the car, let alone in
Yeah,
Ngorongoro,
yes.
I mean, Olduvai Gorge. And so we just turned around and went back to the car. And that was the beginning of it when we started. Then we saw the herdsman after that. So that's our story.
That is just an amazing story. It's one of many that Gary tells in his book, The Vegetable Grows and the Lion Roars, My Peace Corps Service. Just about out of time, but let's sort of sum up everything with the Peace Corps. That always seemed like a really important, worthwhile project that America was doing and really making a mark in various parts of the world, in this case, the Ivory Coast. What was your impression of the Peace Corps, serving in the Peace Corps, the impact that America has had on these foreign countries?
Well, I thought the Peace Corps was an excellent way for the United States to help other countries, and they appreciated that kind of help. That's what I found. I felt my Peace Corps service was very enjoyable, although some of our people in our health education group probably didn't have the rewarding experience that I had. It was interesting. It was challenging. It was rewarding because I believe in the old adage that if you give a person a fish, you feed them for a day. If you teach them how to fish, you feed them for life. And I felt the whole experience was so rewarding because I got to meet a variety of people in African tribes. I made good friendships. I visited many sites in both East and West Africa. And so I was very grateful for the positive experience that I had. I felt that somebody asked me whether what did I get out of it, or how did it affect my perspective of the world? And I said, well, it changed me in two perspectives, one inwardly and one outwardly. Inwardly, my experience taught me that there were so many wonderful people in many countries of the world, in the Ivory Coast, in addition to the tribes that I originally had most of the time with the Bété and the Yacouba, where I spent time in a Yacouba village. I also interacted with the Baolé people, Garé people, and the Sénéfo tribes. In addition to that, I interacted with Canadians, Chinese rice growers, and Lebanese merchants. So I realized that, like all people, the Ivorians want the same things that we want in America, like food, clothing, housing, fun activities, friendships, cooperation, growth, and travel. Just like, in other words, a full life. Outwardly, I saw that people in villages are trying to survive with minimal food, minimal housing, and other essentials that made me feel really more compassionate about them and with them as they daily confronted life's struggles. It made me feel fortunate that we Americans have so many comforts, gadgets, and everything that life offers. I would say it made me feel more responsibility to help them on a national level to improve their standard of living. So there's so much more to it than you can really say in a few words.
Well, you've done a nice job in doing that and give us a sense for what you went through, the achievements you had, what you were able to accomplish as a person and helping these people. It's a remarkable story, what Gary went through and shares in his book, The Vegetable Grows and the Lion Roars, My Peace Corps Service by Gary Lindbergh. Came back, and I think what you made it then to the Air Force, and you had nearly 5 decades in human relations. So it was an amazing career that you had after the Peace Corps as well. Gary's other book that I mentioned, I was going to bring it up again before we ended the conversation, God's Existence, Deeper Thoughts for Greater Insights. That interview is on our archives. Just go to This Week in America or Google it. You'll find that. That book's available on his website as well. And his website is GaryRLindbergh.com. Books, of course, available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. His website information and his Amazon page, links on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. I'd like to thank King Pages Press. That's Gary's marketing consultant, results-oriented, making sure your work gets the attention it truly deserves. They arranged our conversation with Gary today. Gary, always a pleasure. Interesting conversation, what you went through and the importance of what you did during that period representing the United States and other parts of the world. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Well, thank you, Rick, for taking time to talk with me. I really appreciate what you've done, and it's been a pleasure to talk with you again, and I hope that people will find this book as interesting as I thought it was living it, and so I commend it, especially those who like adventure and want to know about different cultures. I think they'll find it very interesting.
And one of the programs here in the country that we really need to still be proud of, the Peace Corps and what they were able to do around the world. The book is The Vegetable Grows and the Lion Roars, My Peace Corps Service by Gary Lindberg. His website is GaryRLindberg.com. Link onto it by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And you're listening to today's program, and we're back with more right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.